Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. Glad that you could join us. Josh is here 2 days in a row. Shouldn't you be back? Shouldn't you be working? Or are you on vacation? Or are you always on vacation? Anyway, good to have all of you with us. Glad that you are here. So we are looking at some challenging passages for New Covenant theology. We're kind of winding down this the series. We're getting close to the end. And there are a few passages that give us some trouble, admittedly. And we need to be honest with that and take a look at it. And as I'll show you today, just like yesterday, this particular passage also gives trouble to covenant theology. So in addition to walking you through how I see it, I want to kind of prepare you when dialoguing with our brothers from the covenant theology and reformed camps, help you not give in, capitulate just because they have some reasonable questions for us as we look at this. So we're going to look at Ephesians 6, 1 to 3 today. Before we get into the text, I remind you that we have John Riesinger's In Defense of Jesus, the New Lawgiver at crosstocrown.org. Go to the bookstore. If you buy that book and use the coupon code LAWGIVER, we will take $5 off, and I believe that brings it down to $9.99, something like that. Several of you took advantage of that yesterday. We'll run that sale for a few more days, so anyway, jump on there, crosstocrown.org, bookstore, In Defense of Jesus, the New Lawgiver, coupon code LAWGIVER. All right, so here's the text, Ephesians 6, 1, 2, and 3. In the literal standard version, it says, "The children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first command with a promise, quote, that it may be well with you and you may live a long time on the land," end quote. Now, if I were a Reformed slash covenant theologian, or maybe more accurately, when I was a Reformed slash covenant theology adherent, this is a passage that I used to contradict, to oppose New Covenant theology. Because he just flat out quotes the Ten Commandments. He says, "Children, obey your parents." And then he just quotes it. There's no explanation. There's no qualification. He simply quotes straight out of the law of Moses, honor your father and mother. And then he gives his commentary of the commands, which would be the Ten Commandments, the Ten Words, or at least it would include the Ten Commandments. He says, of all those commands, this is the first one that is by promise or with a promise. And then he quotes the promise. So as you're reading it, it sure sounds like he is saying children should obey their parents. This is right. How do we know it's right? Because it's in the law. Now, he doesn't use that term, the law, but he does quote from the law. And I will say, this is probably the most difficult verse in the New Testament for New Covenant theology. It just is. And we need to be honest with the text and with what Paul is saying here. Now, before we talk about, you know, how do we handle this, I do want to suggest that covenant theology also has a problem with this text. Can you see it? Can you tell? While I'm giving you a chance to look that over, it seems that you have to defend your New Covenant theology in terms of what the Bible says instead of developing your thinking from Bible truth. You're accusing me of defending my view rather than from the truth? You haven't been around very long, have you? Anyway, do you see it? Rob says this is even more tricky than yesterday's. Yep, I agree. Yeah, Lewis, land. So if you're going to take this as a quote from the law and say, see, the law is binding because Paul quotes it here, he brings the promise that it will be well with you if you obey your parents. It will be well with you, and you will live a long time in the land. That was the promise made to Israel in the Old Covenant. If you're just going to default to the setting and say, see, the law still is binding, then the promise also is true, and it's the land of Israel. That was the setting. The promised land, the land of Canaan that became Israel, that's the land he's talking about as originally given. Now, of course, Reformed Covenant theology is not going to take it literally. They're going to broaden it out as a principle, as a proverb, and say this is true wherever you live. But that's not the promise. That's not the promise. Do you get what I'm saying? When God gave this promise and this command to Israel, when he said it will go well with you and you will live long in the land, he meant in the land he was about to give them. He didn't say it proverbially. He didn't say it as a general principle for anybody. He said to Israel, if they honor their parents, they will live long in the land of Canaan, which became the nation of Israel. And as soon as you start explaining that that land can include other land, then you have left the original context. So here's what a lot of Reformed theologians will do with this, is they will divide this into the moral law and civil law. So the moral law is the honor your parents, which is universal and applicable to everyone everywhere. The civil law is about the land of Israel. And since Jesus has come and Israel is no longer the chosen people, then that part of it is not part of the command. That's the civil, and it's set aside. What's the problem with that? Number one, that's not what the law of Moses says anywhere. And number two, Paul quotes it. So it's an arbitrary division here between the moral and civil. Of course, as we've talked about ad nauseum, the scripture doesn't anywhere divide the law into those categories. Now, someone raised a question. Somebody put this in a comment on yesterday's video, and it was good comment, good question. What about theonomy? Are you familiar with that term, theonomy? So historically, and most Reformed theologians hold to what I've been describing. They divide the law into three parts: moral, civil, and ceremonial. Ceremonial, civil are set aside. That leaves the moral, which is the Ten Commandments. And that's been the historic Reformed covenant theology view. But in the most recent, half a century or so, theonomists is a branch within Reformed covenant theology that have said the ceremonial laws are abrogated because they were fulfilled in Christ, but the moral and the civil laws continue. And so they would take all of the laws given to Israel as a nation and say these should form the foundation of our laws in any nation today. So in the U.S., in Canada, in Europe, wherever you are, your nation, your government's laws should derive from the laws given to Israel, because Israel was a paradigm of God's intent for all nations. So for them, they would extrapolate this and say, whatever land you are in, you will live long in it if you obey, because those laws continue. So you see the difference? They are not setting aside, they're not dividing this command and promise into moral and civil and saying, well, the civil doesn't apply, but the moral does. They're saying, no, they both do. because the only part of the law that's been abrogated is a ceremonial. Now, again, it's all based on assumption and extrapolation, because that division of the law isn't found anywhere in the Old Testament. And I hear a lot of New Covenant guys acknowledging that we can divide the law into those categories, but we just shouldn't take it too far. I'm saying, why? Why even do that? It's given away too much to that view, in my opinion. All right, are you tracking with the covenant view? I'm just trying to point out that even covenant theology, Reformed theology, can't. It's not just a slam dunk for them to come and say, see, it's all here. We have to keep the old covenant law. What about the promise? And as soon as you make a proverb out of it, as soon as you say it's broader than that, then you're going beyond the text. That's not what it was originally given. Megan says, but there's no distinction in the law or, yeah, exactly. Rob says, there is another issue in this that might become a sticking point. And what is that? I'm saying we must develop our thinking or from everything Bible. Yes, and as the Bible has been laid out to us, we are not under the old covenant law. This is the problem with text. Are you agreeing with me, Dr. Rightlife True Teller? Are you agreeing with me or disagreeing with me? I can't tell, because I don't want to debate you if you're not disagreeing with me. Paul says, what does the in the Lord have to do with this passage? Well, one thing that's interesting about that phrase is it's not in some of our Greek manuscripts. So one wonders if it was a scribal edition or not. I don't think so. It's in enough of the best manuscripts that I think it belongs there, but it is a textual variant, if you will. I think, and I'm not going to take the time to unpack all of Ephesians here, but I think obey your parents in the Lord. You know, a lot of these families come from pagan backgrounds, and he's not just giving a blanket statement that you have to obey your parents no matter what they say. If they lead you down to the local temple to start worshiping Zeus, then you are not required to obey that. So I think he's saying, in the fear of the Lord, if your parents are operating in the fear of the Lord, then you should obey them. That's what I think he's getting at. CD says, I believe that Jesus divided the commandments into two sets of five, seeing the law, honor your father and mother, more as a duty towards God than a duty towards men. I'm really enjoying your content. Thank you. Yeah, except Jesus doesn't do that. Where does he do that? Where does he say these commands in the law apply to God and these other commands apply to man? He says, on these two, love the Lord and love your neighbor, the law and the prophets hang on these two. That is not the same thing as saying some of the laws are one way and some of the laws are the other. That's not what he says. It says, no, I'm trying to find the Bible truth apart from presupposition of preconceived human system. Yeah, and that's what we're trying to do too. This is where I was going to go at the end, but I'll just bring it in here. And this is why I hear New Covenant theologians, and maybe I've even said this myself, we sometimes describe New Covenant theology as a system that is opposed to the system of covenant theology and the system of dispensational theology. I don't describe it that way. At least I try not to. I don't like that. I don't want to make it a system. I think as soon as we do that, we're no different from those other two schools of thought. And you know me, I don't like labels. I'm using it for this discussion because it's helpful, but I get emails every now and then of people saying, why haven't you developed a New Covenant Theology Confession of Faith? And someone has done it. Jeff Volker's group, was it Steve Larson? Somebody knows. Josh, you probably know his name. Well, why can't I get his name? Anyway, someone had done that at one time. And I appreciate the thought, but it does kind of, in my opinion, defy the principle of New Covenant theology to develop a confession of faith, because the point is we're trying to be careful not to systematize this and leave room for some differences of opinion. Now, at Cross the Crown, we have a statement of faith, and that might cross the line into systematizing, but I would say it's intended, at least for us here at this ministry, to be helpful to explain to others where we're coming from, but it's malleable. Is that the right word? I'm willing to change it. We are willing to change it as we grow in our understanding of things, as we continue to study and learn. And we don't ever want it to become this hard, fast, now we have articulated the true understanding of the Bible, and we will not waver from it, and you must agree with us if you're going to be in our camp and that kind of thing. I want to avoid that at all costs. Again, to articulate where we're coming from is helpful, especially when people say, what is New Covenant theology? Well, it's this. You know, Blake's book is good. John Reisinger's book is good. And hopefully our statement of faith is helpful, but it's not perfect. It's not flawless. And it's not something we demand adherence to. There are some even things, you know, we wrote that statement of faith years ago. And occasionally I see some things, I think, maybe we should change that. Maybe we should word that differently, take it out altogether. Because I'm not interested in a statement of faith. I'm interested in what the Bible teaches. It also says, why was Paul using the Old Testament to get this message across to Jews? I mean, there's certainly a lot of Jewishness, so to speak, in Ephesians. Yeah, and what's interesting here, let me pull this up, Ephesians. Here's the most recent thing he said about the law in Ephesians. He says that Jesus is our peace who made both, or I guess this is probably God. He is our peace who made both one, meaning both Jew and Gentile, made them one and broke down the middle wall of partition of hostility. Well, what was this middle wall of partition of hostility that separated the Jews and the Gentiles? He says, it's the enmity in his flesh, having done away with the law of command in ordinances. So, and it's kind of getting ahead to how we're going to handle this as NCT folks. Paul says here very clearly that God had done away with the law of commands in ordinances. So it seems unlikely that he would then come a couple chapters later and impose one of those commands on Christians when he just previously said God did away with those commands. So we'll come back to that in a second. Let me take a couple more comments here. The land issue is only found in Deuteronomy 5, not in Exodus 20. Does this mean the law is only the first part and not both parts of the law? Yeah, we see that the Sabbath too changes from Exodus and Deuteronomy. So, Deuteronomy, they're heading into the land. In Exodus, they are not quite there yet. No, I think it's all the law. I wouldn't go there. How does Paul's command here imply the law is still binding? Well, I don't think it does, but if I were trying to make that argument, then I would certainly put the burden of proof on you and me to say, then why does Paul quote it if he doesn't think it's binding on us? CD says, I don't agree with what the Jews believe, but was just pointing that out. Are you referring back to so maybe I misunderstood you. And again, this happens a lot. I apologize. I'm reading these comments quickly and probably making too many assumptions. I should read them more slowly. The Reformed guys do believe the first table of the law, the first, two tablets. The first tablet was Godward, and that's the first four commands. And the second tablet contained the remaining six commands, and they were our horizontal man-to-man commands. And that's not, I don't think it's what's going on there at all. But I think we covered that in a different. How does Paul? Oh, I just read that. I would love to know the main differences of NCT and Progressive Covenant theology. It seems, Yeah, maybe before we wrap this series up, we'll spend some more time there. All right, so I'm admittedly, this is difficult. What I think Paul is doing, especially in light of what he just said about that law of ordinances and commands being abolished, being taken away, I think he is showing this command to obey your parents is important to God. Look that when God gave this command in the old covenant, he attached a promise to it. That's how important it was back then. It's the first command that he made a promise to the Jews regarding that if they obeyed, if they honored their parents, they would live long in the land. It would go well with them. So that's what makes sense to me. Now, again, admittedly, I'm having to explain how and why Paul quotes directly from the Ten Commandments when everything else we have seen through the whole New Testament says we are not under that law. Paul does not give us any qualification explanation here. He just said, I read it to you. He did away with the law of commands in ordinances. He did away with it. And then later in chapter 6, he quotes from that same law that he says is done away with. So we all have to figure that out. We all have to reckon with why does he do that? And you may say, well, what's the big deal? So it's true in both covenants. He's just bringing it forward and saying, yep, this is now part of the law of Christ kind of thing. That's true, but the assumptions matter because covenant reform guys are going to use this to say, therefore, we should keep the Sabbath and all the other laws. When the New Testament tells us, no, that's not true, not required. So I'm just trying to be honest with the difficulty of this verse for the rest of the passages we've been looking at that just says we're not under that old covenant law. That's not our law. It was given to Israel for a specific purpose. It was all pointing toward Christ, but now we obey Christ. And obviously, yes, I'm going to say that obedience to parents is part of the law of Christ, as part of the new covenant requirement. Absolutely. Paul says it, children, obey your parents. But we do still have to wrestle with why he quotes this. So, bottom line for me is, I think he's saying we know how important this is to God because in the old covenant, he had a promise attached to it. It's the first one. And here I am repeating it to you. Paul says in the new covenant, children, obey your parents. This is right. This is right. I'm just trying to admit it's not perfectly satisfactory. Now, you may be more satisfied than I am, but I'm not completely. Could it be just that new covenant is by faith, so children may not be covered just yet? Is that regarding the in the Lord part or just in general? I'm not sure. So what does it mean when Jesus said he did not come to abolish the law? Yeah, did you watch that? I did a whole video on that one, so I'm not going to repeat that. You can go back and check that out. Exodus 20:12, honor your father and your mother that your days may be long in the land. Yep, that's what he's saying. Paul in chapter 5 starts with the imitators of God walk in love. Look carefully then how you walk, be filled with the Spirit. Then, yep, that's true. Paul says, for this is right, not because it is in the old law. Agreed. Yep. Ron says, our pastor says there are nine of the Ten Commandments in the New Testament. Yeah, ask him where the prohibition against graven images is. Yeah, and Mike Keith, that's right. This is right. We still again have to reckon with what why is he quote the old covenant here without explanation? Do you think the emphasis is on temporal biological living, have blessing in the land, but we are citizens of heaven? That's what a lot of the covenant guys, that's the point they make. I don't think that's what was meant to Israel. And I would take this for us in the new covenant. I'm okay taking this proverbially. I'm saying it violates covenant theology, Reformed theology, to take it proverbially. They need to take it literally because of how it was given. For us, I think, yeah, he's saying, generally speaking, well, maybe I won't say that. It is true. If you read the Proverbs, there are many, many Proverbs, and which by definition are short aphorisms of general wisdom. They're not universal. They're not absolute. They're general. So generally speaking, if parents are good parents and their children obey them, the world's going to be a better place. I mean, look at all the wickedness in our world today. If parents discipline their children and children obey their parents, so much of the wickedness we see would go away. So I think it's generally true that we will live well in the land if we obey our parents, assuming our parents are in the Lord and giving godly instruction. But I don't think that's what was meant in the Old Covenant. When God gave this command to Israel and this promise to Israel, he was saying, I will cause you to prosper in this land because of your obedience. Those were the terms of the covenant. If you read the curses and blessings in Deuteronomy 28, for instance, or Leviticus 16, the blessings, if you do this, if you obey my laws, I will cause you to prosper. It's not a proverb as given in the law. Do you see this? This is the point I was trying to make earlier. Maybe I didn't say it well. When God gave the command to Israel with this promise that they will live well in the land and live long, he was not saying, because generally it's true that obedient kids prosper and live well. That was not the point of the law. That was not proverbial. It was a promise that God would cause them to prosper because they were obeying his commands. That's very important. Because like all of the other commands, God says, if you obey me, I will do this and this and this. You will have military victory over all of your enemies. Not because keeping the commands made them better soldiers, but because God would bless them by granting victory because of their obedience. Remember when God gave them extra food, extra manna for the Sabbath day, and then the other days it rotted if they didn't eat it quickly enough? That had nothing to do with wisdom and the benefits to the Jews of obedience. No, it was direct prosperity and well-being because of obedience. That was how it was given to Israel. So if we're going to say that Paul is directly quoting this and therefore extrapolate that all of the commands of the Old Covenant are binding, then we have to limit this to prosperity in Israel if we're going to be consistent. And I'm saying the rest of the New Testament tells us that's not true. That's not how it works. So this can't be simply bringing forward the command and applying it to Christians. I think we as New Covenant Theology can take this proverbially, and say, generally speaking, we will live well if we obey our parents. But either way, and getting back to Mike's statement, the bottom line is Paul says, children, obey your parents. This is right. This is the right thing because this is what the Lord wants. And we now know that, or we're reminded, that's what God wanted in the Old Covenant as well. Some translations may say earth. Yeah, that's true. The Greek word gay is the word that is translated land or earth, and eretz is the Hebrew word. And so often in the prophets especially, but even back in the law, it would be better if they always translated eretz in as land and then let us interpret it based on the context as to whether it's broader than the land of Israel. Because it is used for the land of Israel, and sometimes it seems to be broader than that. But when you hear earth, when you read earth, you think, oh, the whole world. Much of the time, it means the land of Israel or land of Canaan as opposed to the whole earth. So yeah, that's confusing. They should translate it land. The law requires perfect every time obedience from totally depraved, rebellious sinners. Yep, indeed, indeed. All right, so all this to say, I mean, this is hard. And if I were a covenant guy, I wouldn't let up. I'd beat you down with this. But now hopefully you have a little bit of preparation to respond and say, okay, what about the land? And watch them try to explain how land doesn't have to be the land of Canaan, land of Israel. Again, I'll say, as New Covenant folks, be careful about forming a system here. Let's be honest with the difficulty. And again, there's tension. Chapter 2, he says, the law of ordinances has been done away with. And now he's quoting the Old Covenant law. We do have to explain that. And don't be so rigid and don't become like covenant theology. Say, yep, it's hard, but these other passages in Ephesians and elsewhere seems to say very clearly that we're not under that law. So what do we do with this one? Well, here's my best understanding. But don't let this one verse overturn all the other passages we've looked at, because you can pile them up over and over and over again, and we see in the whole flow of history in the Bible, biblical history, as laid out in the scripture, the law of Moses was for Israel, period. So don't give up that simply because this verse is a little more difficult. And also don't develop a system that is so rigid that you're not willing to wrestle through these things and say, yeah, there's some tension here. All right. Tomorrow, I'm thinking right now anyway, we will look at James. There's a couple statements that James makes that also can be a little bit difficult for us. So that's what I'm thinking about doing. We'll see if I change my mind between now and then. Have a great day, everyone. Grace and peace to you. We'll see you tomorrow.